And I've had conversations where the individual on the other side of the table was like, I don't want a border. I don't care about laws on the border. Anybody that wants to come across here and plant a flag has the right to do so. Those conversations happen.
Never quit radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. As always, thank you guys for listening and watching, and please don't forget to hit that like and subscribe button. So today, before we get to our special guest, let's kick it off with our weekly Patreon question of the day. Today, we have a simple one. So what is your favorite exotic animal?
Mine's a wolverine.
Have you ever had one of those?
No, they're terrifying.
So is this what we come in contact with, or is this just overall?
I don't know. I'm a big tiger guy, though.
Obviously. watch a couple of documentaries on wolverines. They're just, if you catch the good ones, I don't have specific names. They just, you know, they're about as big around as a large house cat, but they are absolutely unstoppable.
I've seen some videos.
I mean,
they look pretty vicious.
They just and do not care.
Mm-hmm. That and a honey badger.
Apparently they're pretty rowdy. Mm-hmm. I heard honey badgers get pretty rowdy. What do you got?
I can't think of one.
That's not really an easy one.
Penguin?
I mean,
penguins are cute.
I could take them or leave them.
You know what the fastest animal on the planet is? Exotic?
Cheetah?
Nope. Per scale.
Flea?
Nope, a Chinese spider beetle. Huh. So fast to run on water.
Mm-hmm.
But yay big.
When we went to Peru, I got to hold a sloth. I thought that was pretty cool. They're like comfy and I liked it.
Man, we had pet giraffes. I thought they were great.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
I mean, you know, from my experiences, the giraffes were the way to go.
Yeah, that's all we got.
Wolverine. Let's go with that.
And yours is tiger. Okay.
Yeah, mine's tiger.
Well, Congressman, I appreciate you penciling me in and coming back and seeing us.
Good to be home.
How are things?
They're good. It was an eventful first year.
I can't wait to talk about it.
In the 118th Congress.
I can't wait to hear about it. So let's back it all the way up to, how long have we been in?
It was a year, January, I think, if I remember correctly, we swore on the 6th or 7th at 2 o'clock in the morning, January 6th or 7th, so it's been a year.
Okay, so we've been in a little over a year.
A little over a year.
We've been doing this a little bit over a year. Let's back it up to when we started running till now.
It's almost a blur.
Exactly. But I want to talk about what that was like, because I was seeing stuff from the outside and then intermittently moving back and forth. So when we first started, because you're an active duty congressman, freshman, but you had a year under your belt, man. Looking back,
I would say there's
what was the toughest part about getting into it?
Campaigning is a challenge, especially if you've never been in the political space or have any kind of political knowledge on how it functions. There's, because politics is everywhere, and as a congressional member, you have to have not an overwhelming knowledge on every single topic that, you know, drives the American public or those constituents in the district, but you have to have a good understanding of what's going on, not only district-wide and district aid, but state and federal and international, because you're the representative for the district. You're the voice and the representation. So you have to be able to engage with someone who's asking you various questions on things that you... I had a young lady ask me why I can't stop the hurricanes. And I don't have an answer for that, but I try to engage the best I can.
You can't believe it comes in the door, right?
There's been some good ones. But nonetheless, as a candidate, as a member now, looking back as myself as a candidate, there's changes I would have made. I didn't know what I didn't know in certain circumstances. And there's things that I wouldn't have really engaged with as heavy as I did. And there, I think there's, it took me a while to figure out, because at first I thought there was somebody that I was supposed to mold myself into. I thought I was supposed to create this political individual. And I think I was a month or two into it when I said, you know what? I can't do that. I have no idea what that is. I'm just going to be Morgan.
In the job, right?
In the job. From start to finish, after that moment, I quit trying to be someone else and try to answer questions politically. I answered them with the knowledge that I had. You know, take emotion out of the question. You can't be emotional in this job.
At all, right?
At all. It'll drive.
Is that the problem?
You can say that there's, and when you add emotion into a leadership situation, it can steer things in the wrong direction. If you're emotionally attached in any given depth, a knee jerk reaction could happen, and you can outstep yourself or outpoint your coverage.
Is that the true difference between a good leader?
No, I wouldn't say that.
Removing emotion from the situation?
I just think I personally is Morgan. Remember, everything that I say today is Morgan's opinion. This is Morgan's perspective.
I'm trying to learn. Up in there now.
I'm not speaking for anyone else but Morgan. And this is just the way that I've seen it in my first year. So from that day forward, when I was campaigning and into D.C., I really always answered questions truthfully, in total transparency. You know, I work in the classified space with House Armed Services and Homeland. There's things I can't talk about because it's classified, but I try to be very engaging with anybody that asks me any particular question, honestly. Like, hey, if we were sitting at the Thanksgiving table and somebody asked me, if mom asked me a question, I would answer her the same way I do anybody in the district. And it served me very well because I don't have to remember back if exactly what I said, because it's a response off of the education and knowledge I've brought together in my first year. Candidate Morgan is very different now because I have such a depth of what actually happens either in the halls of Congress, up and down the government establishment, to the White House, to the Senate, out to the judiciary, and just the departments abroad. You know, we get briefed on that by leadership. So I can, when I was a candidate, I would say hey, look, we're going to secure the border. That's my number one objective, being a congressional man from District 8. The border is the number one issue.
That's what we campaigned on. District 8.
That's it. That was the hardest one. The border, and immigration. It's such a complex problem set. And it's not just Morgan that has to get behind the idea to fix the issue. It's 218 members of the Republican Party and Democratic Party. We have to come together to vote that out of the House of Representatives and move it to the Senate. The Senate would have to agree on what the House created, and then it would go to the President if everything was in line, like they agreed. And then we would get the signature, the laws would be enacted, and our agents across the northern and southern border would have ability to stop the mass migration of illegal immigration coming across.
Did you know any of how to explain it or talk about any of this before you got
not,
in there?
Not to the detail, because I have the opportunity to talk to the CBP chief.
Right,
because
saying you're going to fix the border and then getting in there and seeing the problem.
When I was a candidate, I knew what I saw on the media. I knew, and then when I was talking to elected officials in the district and how much they knew. But taking all of that and adding to it as a member of Homeland Security, but then you have to convince all the other members that what you, like Morgan, I think, because I'm very hard. Our House Resolution 2 that we pushed up is very strict. It's very conservative, restrictive on what the border should look like, in our opinion. It's sitting in the Senate right now, and it has not gone anywhere because it's so stringent, and the Senate's trying to pull it apart and send bits and pieces back down to the House of Representatives to push through, which we don't want to do because it acts as a whole. If you start taking it apart, the machine breaks down. I've moved legislation through the lower chamber that even my own colleagues have shot down because it was so aggressive. Mm. Like, I think if you come across the border with a load of fentanyl, you should get the death penalty. Wholeheartedly.
Real quick, like you acknowledge that you alone can't change this because you are part of a pie.
A largest, yeah.
And But
and that's set up so just one person can't come in
it's
there.
It's created that way for a very specific reason.
But which can you go to each individual, like yourself, go mm-hmm. walk into their offices and have these deep conversations? Sure,
and I do. And I've had conversations where the individual on the other side of the table was like, I don't want a border. Mm-hmm. I don't care about laws on the border. Anybody that wants to come across here and plant a flag has the right to do so. I will never. Those conversations happen. And that's how the system...
An American says that?
A congressional member.
A sitting congressional member says that we don't need to have borders.
Yes.
Okay.
And they represent 600,000 to 800,000 people, and those 600,000 to 800,000 people obviously feel the same way that they do because they elected that particular individual to sit in the House of
Representatives. How many do we look out for? Do you know? In our district?
Our district is right over 700,000 and growing.
And that's Montgomery County?
Montgomery County, Walker County, Polk, San Jacinto, and Harris County.
That's where we cover down on all them.
Correct.
You met all of them?
All 800,000? I'm trying.
Well, you need some help? I'll help you.
Get out there.
We got to meet every one of them, right?
I tried.
Because every one of them is come up to us.
You know, if we did the math on this as best we could with the numbers. Again, they change. If I was to spend 1 minute with every member in the 8th district, it would take 1 minute with every
person. There's two of us, so I can help you with this,
person,
man.
Well, that's good, because it would take me 4 years to talk to every person for 1 minute.
So that's the first 4 years. First 4 years of our enlistment, we just got to meet everybody? Is that what's happening?
That's.
I mean, I applaud you, bro, because for what you're saying with the chambers and lower chambers, when I hear you speak like that, it's amazing to me, because we were educated together, but now you're speaking some stuff. Like, I understand what you're saying, but kind of.
I know, it's...
Because most of the time, system like, sitting out here, remember where I'm sitting from, like, hey, man, why isn't shit getting done?
It's a great question. I get that quite a bit. And it's not just Morgan representing the United States.
Now, I get that. No, we get
so even there's that. Even members of Texas, you know, that we disagree on certain things. I didn't vote to raise the debt ceiling. I did not agree. And the House itself, the Four Corners and the Gang of Eight, Four Corners are the leadership in the House. Four Corners.
What does that mean?
It's the leadership of the Republican and Democratic Party. They call it the Four Corners. So the leadership in both parties call it, and then you have the Gang of Eight, which is the House.
Schumer,
and the House. Schumer's, Jeffries, McCarthy.
Not McCarthy,
it's Mr. Johnson now, yes.
And
the president.
No, he's not. He's not included.
Oh.
So the Gang of Eight is the lower leadership in the lower chamber.
Okay.
Now.
So you get along with senators?
Of course.
Like you just walk over and be like, hey, what's up?
Well, you don't really do that.
When you walked me over there.
Like Mark Wayne Mullen's great. You know, I talk to him all the time. He's over the top awesome. He's a really good guy.
I'm jumping all over.
So let me go back to, and it's, so again, it's not Morgan representing the entire country. It's Morgan representing District 8. There's 38 members in Texas in the House of Representatives.
We know all them, right?
There's 38 of them. Not all of them. That's Republican, Democrat, which is fine. It's great. You know, because, again, representation is directly correlated to...
The constituents.
Mm-hmm. So I have... If I was to walk into a member's office and say, hey, I'm not voting for the debt ceiling because I don't want to add $2 trillion to the debt. I'm a very fiscally conservative guy. I don't want to add $2 trillion of debt. The leadership did an amazing job with what they had negotiating with the White House and how all this was going to play out. We had the top line numbers and what this looked like. I just voted no for it. Members in the Texas delegation voted yes. There was different numbers. And that's totally fine because their district was okay with what came out. I wasn't. We had a continuing resolution passed last week and Thursday. I did not vote for that. I was one of 60 members that did not vote for that because it didn't have any border in it. They voted to extend the budget from the previous Congress until March. You know, I really... Kicking the can down the road.
Why do y'all mix all that stuff together as opposed to just handling one problem at a time?
So we try to... All right, that's a very deep question. So we in the lower chamber create... appropriate. It's not. We create appropriations bills. And appropriations bills fund the government. And each committee is responsible for an appropriation.
So you got the wallet.
The lower chamber has the wallet, correct.
We're in
charge of the money.
And you get to say who you give it to.
Correct.
And they got to come in and be how like, much? Dad, I need some cash.
But correct. Then it has to be voted on.
It does. So House Armed Services, Homeland, VA, those are the committees that we sit on. But you have Ways and Means, you have Energy and Commerce, you have Agricultural, you have small business, you have science and space. Those are all appropriations. So we have to fund each one of those, because science and space, that's NASA, right? And all the other organizations that fall underneath that umbrella. Now, for instance, DOD, House Armed Services, we had almost $1 trillion. $896 billion, I think.
In your bank account. That's how much money y'all have.
That's how much we were given by the government.
Okay, so that's much, how much y'all have.
Spend on
whatever.
Defense.
Yeah. On defense.
Now, here's where it gets tricky, because you would think, oh, that makes sense. Let's send that out. And so the language, like I negotiate language. I debate language. I could put, like, I want hypersonic capabilities to be put in the National Defense Authorization Act. I want to spend $50 million on these. This is total hypothetical. I'm not giving you exact numbers.
Right.
I want to spend $50 million on hypersonics. Okay. I will submit that language to the committee, to House Armed Services Committee, and the thousands and thousands and thousands of amendments that they get from every member. Like, I submitted almost over 40, and they accepted 40 of them. I think I had somewhere upwards of 50 or 60, but they took 40 of them. They're like, hey, we like these. We're going to fund it. Okay. The ones that they didn't like, they kicked out. They're like, hey, we're not paying for this. We're not going to allow this to come through. We're not going to fund it this year. So I would go back to committee and I would argue. I'm like, I want this in here. Mm-hmm. I need this in here for not only my district, but I think it benefits the military. I need you to put that back in. So here goes the debate. They're like, well, okay, so let's break this out. That makes sense. We didn't see it this way. Here it is. This is the debate, right? The congressional debate. And they go, okay, that makes sense. We can't give you millions of dollars, 20 million for this, but we're going to give you 10. I was like, okay, I can accept that in 2024 and 2025. If the effort is successful, we're going to have to revisit and bump it up some if necessary. Okay.
Is this conversation happening live, or is it papers going back and forth?
Both. Okay. Like, I go member to member, and I personally, Morgan's leadership style is more effective if I'm sitting down in front of the subcommittee chairs or the chairman or the committee and saying, hey, look, here's my language. You redlined it here. I need you to tell me why that happened, because I'm going to tell you why I need it. And if they could very well say, well, there's language from three other members that's very similar, which I wouldn't know. Like, three members in the Republican Party or the Democratic Party could have said, hey, look, we're submitting this together. And that didn't get to me at that time. It'll show up eventually. I could have got ahead of it. Because we don't sit 435 strong and just talk about every single amendment. There's thousands and thousands and thousands of them. So that's where your staff and committee come to play. They'll get this language and then they'll come to you and say, hey, we know that you're big on hypersonics. 20 other members are moving on hypersonics. Here's their language. Your language is very similar. Do you want to combine them? Or are you okay with just going with theirs? And there's instances I would say, that makes total sense. Matter of fact, it's a little bit more detailed than mine. Let's go with that. So that's how appropriations come together.
So you came in your first year. I mean, have you gotten anything done?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We got
a list.
Yeah, let's get to that. let me finish where I was going with this. The reason that we passed that continuing resolution, all right, we've pushed last Congress's budget down the road. We keep moving that down there. Instead of doing the new appropriations bills, we keep the one in place from last Congress, and we keep pushing it down the road.
Why?
Pushing it down the road. Because we can't get the new 12 created. We haven't got everyone we need to vote all the appropriations bills in time. So when you do that, you create a continuing resolution.
Is there a number to when you get to, like, so many of those that you have to actually do your job?
You would think so.
Like three?
Well.
Two, maybe?
As far as appropriations? No.
Those continuations when, like, hey, you know what? They're going to do this. We're going to kick it to freshmen.
We're into this year.
That's what's happening,
We're
right?
into 2024, which we haven't passed. And now we have to start 25. Mm. So now we're working on both. And how it has played out in the past, which frustrates everybody, excuse me, is it has usually come to what they call an omnibus bill at the end of the year.
I've heard that term. Right?
So an what does that mean? Omnibus bill is like going to the refrigerator on Sunday, everything
clean
that you
out everything after
clean it all out, put it in one vote. So everything will slam into the house floor.
You have any idea what's in that?
No, not
whether normally. It's expired, whether it's good, whether it's rotten, whether you can even eat it.
Okay, that's a good analogy. It's usually very cumbersome.
Because you've seen the way me and you clean some shit out.
Yeah, so we don't want to do that because it's not good order. What we want is good order.
I get
order.
That.
But it has that's what it has happened in the past. I won't vote for an omnibus bill because I think that we should have everything under good order. You have a minibus. You have the big one, omnibus.
And you got a short bus?
And then you have a minibus. Now, a minibus would be a smaller appropriation. It's like, hey, we're going to vote VA, and we're going to vote through NDAA. Everybody's going to sign because the language makes sense. We're going to send it to the Senate. They give us the green light. They send it to the president. The president signs it off. All right, so 2024 is done. All right, that's a minibus. And
so does that happen now? Oh, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Over the past year, freshman year, we've had our appropriations bills that we've tried to get together, which we weren't able to do. They did increase the debt ceiling. With Democratic colleagues came across the aisle and voted with some Republicans, and they pushed the debt ceiling up. We did push the budget down with another continuing resolution, and in that process, the Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy, was removed. All right, I'm almost positive that was the first time in history. I think it was the first time in history a speaker's been removed. I should know that, but for some reason there was one other. But anyway, so Mr. McCarthy was removed of office because of debt ceiling, appropriations bills, and the combination of certain things had 8 Republicans and the entire Democratic Party motion to vacate Mr. McCarthy, and the vote passed. So we were minus the Speaker of the House in the 118th Congress. Once that happened, the House shut down. You can't operate the government without a Speaker.
So was this like the dad went home?
I don't know if I'd necessarily say it that way. So the function of the speaker is to control the House. He or she dictates what enters
both sides of the House or just one.
Great question. So here's how I see this. The Speaker of the House's responsibility is to control the lower chamber, the House of Representatives. Okay, that's the Speaker's job. The Speaker's job is not to be a diehard Republican, diehard Democrat. The Speaker, they can be in that party. I got it. And when the majority, whichever majority is in,
see how that would piss people off.
Of course. Mm-hmm. But the Speaker's role is to make the government function. Mm-hmm. Period.
Keep them in check, discipline, right. Order.
They have
routine,
to appreciate, hey, look, if I'm a Republican, my Republican colleagues are going to push this legislation over to me, but my Democratic colleagues, all 213 of them, have legislation from their people. They're going to bring me legislation that I have to look at. I have to read. I have to understand that these people are representative of people of the United States of America. I have to see that. So for 3 weeks, we were without a speaker. There were multiple members that ran for the position. And then Mr. Mike Johnson from Louisiana was elected in with 100% of the votes. And he's been in office since October. Late October, I believe, was the exact date.
Let me, real fast.
Okay.
Do y'all get along? Do y'all like each other, Democrats, Republicans?
I know
because we get along.
For Morgan. I can't tell. I get along famously.
But there's some hate in there, right?
Well, of course, you can see that plays itself out all the time. There's members up there that can't be in the same room with each other.
Is it possible, so whatever the Democrats need to get done for their constituents, they have to hand it to the Republicans to get it done?
Not necessarily.
And then the Republicans have to hand what they want done to the Democratic leadership, and that way they moderate it.
Well, no, okay, so that can happen. You can have Democratic colleague with, so Republicans are in the majority now, and if there is a member of the Democratic Party that has a very sound piece of legislation and it seems as if, hey, look, if a Republican was carrying this, it would have a better opportunity to pass. We had Mr. Correa out of California.
Y'all do that, right? Tell me you do that.
Yeah, Mr. Correa out of California had a brilliant amendment for the border security and advancing technologies at the border for our border agents. And he and I worked together on that bill, and it was sound, and I carried it over, and we moved it out, and it got put in. It was great. Mr. Ivey same thing. He helped me with a piece of legislation that allowed family members to come in through through the airport, and when they walk through, it's totally escapes me.
Take your time, man.
Now, when you can bypass the visa line, they go straight to the machine. Mm-hmm. What is that called?
The global entry.
Global entry, yeah. Mm-hmm. So global entry, you couldn't have your kids under a certain age. Everybody had to go through. But we passed a piece of legislation when my Democrat colleague said, hey, if you're under 12, you can move through with your parents.
Yeah.
And then you can also go to Homeland, and when you do your interviews, normally it had to be just you, and it would be Melanie, and then it would be Hunter, and then Axe would have to go, and then Addie would have to go. As a family of four, now you can go.
Oh, nice.
You know? And so my Democratic colleagues helped me with that. So, to answer your question is, that happens? Sure, absolutely. And the House is, you know, it's no secret, we're very polarized.
We all know that out here. We're wondering why.
Because there's two totally different mindsets. Like you said, there's one.
It's always like that, right hand, left hand.
Well, but there's one body, though, right? But it's so extreme. Like one sits there and says that we should have completely open borders, like we're not even a country. Like we can just let anybody in. And then we've got most of America that says, no, we need to know who's coming in our country.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. So the borders, you and I grew up here. Mm-hmm. And the amount of people, the borders are always open. And matter of fact, it didn't matter if they're open or not because they're not using the gate. They're coming over everywhere around the gate.
The majority of the entries come through a large number of individuals that are entering the country are coming through the ports of entry. It's the ones that come through other areas.
Right. So I'm curious with the numbers that are coming through that are so staggering.
Also the problem.
This is the first time this has happened. I mean, it's almost as if, like, is there a rock concert going on or something that we don't know about? Because they're flushing in here like there's one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're not talking about a few people who need some good time or something better coming over. We're talking about, like, something has been planned. Like, they're moving with a purpose because there's so many of them. No one would just show up. Hell, people don't even show up here when I invite them. You understand me? Like, I mean, getting invited is one thing, but there's got to be some kind of, hey, I'm going to walk this far and go through this to get there. Who's playing there? What's happening?
The Biden administration is that the funding lines for illegal immigrants that come across, they're assisted. You know,
I just heard that.
They get money. They get all kinds of things.
So we pay them.
You know, the cartel is doing...
They're doing a great job with it, right?
They're really making billions and billions and billions of dollars off of moving illegal immigrants into our country. There's so many countries that are represented. Yeah. You have some that, hey, and I get it, there are some that are absolutely 100% seeking asylum.
Sure.
I was standing at the border a couple weeks ago, and there was four or five folks walking, and they were yelling out the word Venezuela. From Venezuela, Venezuela, Venezuela. Now, we don't send people back to Venezuela. We don't have reciprocity with that country. So they're in.
We're talking about some fighting age males, too. I've been watching those lines.
Yeah, there's fighting age males coming across in the droves. A lot of people don't appreciate what that means, how bad that can be.
The question with the fentanyl, you and I were talking about this. It's like if a nuclear bomb went off in China or Mexico and the radiation's spreading through. That's what's in those pills. Why can't that become an enemy of the state if one of those will kill?
So we lose around 100,000 folks a year because of fentanyl. And the main source, the main avenue of entry into the country is through the southern border with the drugs. That's my argument every day when I'm in D.C. is that we have to shut multiple reasons why we have to shut the border down, but we are losing American citizens.
Because there's nuclear waste coming through.
Because of the poison that's coming across that southern border. The administration has refused to lock the border down. We were in Eagles Pass. The day we were there, there was 200 people being processed through the center that we had visited. And 2 days before, there were 6,000. So you can lock it down. They showed us right there.
Oh, you can lock it down. You don't need tech either. We got people down there that can lock that down.
Governor Abbott's down at the park. He's put the Constantine wire up. He's locked that place down. We're in lawsuit right now with the United States government. I think Governor Abbott's doing a great job with that. Hey, keep it up. Move forward. Fight with the Constitution. Stop this invasion that we're seeing. In my opinion, you know Texas is doing a great job. The federal government's coming down here suing us.
So has the White House told you why they're doing that? Like when you straight up ask them, okay, say, hey.
They'll say the border.
Even if we are moving all these people in here.
No, because we're in the process of impeaching Mayorkas. And their response to us is the border's secure. We don't have a problem.
We all know that's not true.
We do.
Everyone knows that now. Even the Democrats are leaking that out. I saw that on TV. And when they break ranks, which that was the craziest thing you taught me. I always thought Republican conservatives, we were the ones with the discipline. I preached that on stage. You and I grew up with that. It's the only thing that saved our lives. Come to find out, the Democrats are the one with discipline.
Well, they're maybe not disciplined, but they have loyalty yes, to they each do. Other.
Well, they got both. And they're even breaking ranks now.
Well, you can't hide from the problem.
That's my point. It's like now everyone can see it. It's kind of festering out. I'm just curious as to what's the end game with
it. I don't understand why the administration won't act on it. You have New York, Chicago, Denver. They just don't say anything
when you ask. I know you ask. They just kind of shrug it off or be like, hey, or change the subject. I mean.
Yeah, exactly what they do. They can always say, hey, that we're working on it. The problem is, they'll say, hey, the problem's getting better. We're doing what we can. The border's secure.
They just lie through their teeth.
So then it's not a lie. So then the way you got to look at it, it's like, okay, so this is the best you can do. If this is the best you can do, I just need to know that. Because we got some other people that can try to do better. Because you're ruining the people. There's an American way of life, and you know this. And that's kind of what's getting disrupted, the peace. The overall peace, the trash. I'm not talking about the people. I'm just like containing all of that. There's an ebb and flow that happens daily, an American kind of way of life. And it's just like, hey, man, what are we doing? That's, I think, most everybody out here, if you could just tell them that, we can square a lot of things away.
This is another one of those, when I was a candidate, now that I'm a member thing. Like, I can't go up there and get into a fist fight. I can't go beat anybody up.
I know it. And that's the hardest thing for us to do.
I can't arrest anybody.
I think about it all the time with you.
My job is a legislator. I pass laws. As complex as that is, and I'm doing every single day as hard as I can to move laws in order to protect the people of Texas in the United States.
We've got every other state to deal with because they're trying to do the same thing.
The southern states are doing the exact same thing. It gets into, I mean, you can call it political ugliness, which it is. It hits a stall point because immigration and border security is a hot button political topic.
Well, it's affecting people.
Well, it was way past affecting people. The towns on the border are just being scuttled because the mass migration that's coming through there, taking everything from the hospitals to the grocery stores.
Oh, man, it's unbelievable.
Anyway.
So back to the Appropriations Committee, you were talking about how you go back and forth. You're constantly debating on money. Mm-hmm. Do you think that you've been a leader in our military, you've had lots of experience on just leadership alone. Do you find that there's a solution to make it better, the process of that better?
Well, we have a spending problem. The process itself works if you realize that you can't spend more than you have.
But I mean communication. So like how you're saying that there's multiple... Exactly.
What do they say when you say that? Like, hey, man, I want to buy this. Like, we don't have any money, but it'll be all right.
I'm talking about like you were saying that maybe some other Republicans put in the same for the same thing. Mm-hmm. Can y'all all talk first and cut out some of that time?
That's a great point. And this is where kind of the complexities of DC happen. I see colleagues normally just when I'm on the floor with them. Mm-hmm. Because DC is it is a very busy place. So between being on the House Armed Services Committee, Homeland, VA in six subcommittees and meeting with the constituents that come to DC in the various meetings in between all those, having the ability to talk to every member to see exactly where they stand on the thousands and thousands and thousands of amendments that are coming out, very challenging.
Yeah.
Very challenging. I know that on Homeland, I'm on the border and the cyber subcommittee. So I can talk directly to my subcommittee members, and we move legislation together. But main committee, there's numerous other subcommittees that do something completely different, and they could collide in a good way. Same thing on the VA. I move legislation through disability assistance and through health, but there could be two other committees that are working on something similar, and when they could come together. But I won't know that because I may not see them for weeks, mm-hmm. have the ability to talk to them. And that may frustrate folks, but it is from sun up to sundown, you're always somewhere else, mm-hmm. sadly enough. And after the first year, moving into my second year, people understand where I stand. Mm-hmm. They know I'm a very fiscally conservative guy. They know I'm a very conservative guy. They know I'm very, very all in on veterans. They know homeland is very important to me. So it has started to present when members, hey, look, I got a homeland idea. Hey, man, let's go talk to Morgan. We know he's involved in this. Mm-hmm. And I've learned that about other members. I know Derek Van Orden's big in agriculture. I know Derek's very big on VA. So if I have a VA question, I'll rally up Derek. I'll rally up Eli and General Bergman. And I was like, hey, guys, I have this idea. And Bergman may say, I got the same thing going. Mm-hmm. Let's tie these things together.
Yeah.
You got anybody like that, across the aisle? Like, do you have any made relations with Democrats?
Sure. Yeah,
let them know, like, hey.
Absolutely.
I would think that because you've been involved in like the supercomputer with the Department of Energy, if there was something that would make things more streamlined, like a supercomputer intranet for Congress, where you spit out what your goals are, and then they all, it's almost like an AI type thing that just generates.
Wow. Okay, so I see where you're going with that.
Just to make things more.
Like each day of the year, worked on one thing from one congressman.
Okay, I got to think about that one. I understand where you're going with that. Any given member probably receives 5,000 to 10,000 emails a day,
mm-hmm.
apart from their committee assignments. Language lives inside the committee. So when a member submits, like if I submit 40 amendments, 40 different pieces of legislation to the VA.
Mm-hmm.
It'll sit in the VA committee system and the committee staff. So you have the VA committee, okay? And the VA committee has staff members. I don't know the exact number. And they read everything that we submit,
mm-hmm.
right? So if multiple pieces of language land in it or similar, the VA committee staff will reach out to my staff mm-hmm. and me and the other members and say, hey, you guys are speaking the same language.
Yeah.
Right?
I get that.
That does happen.
Yeah. It just seems very dinosaur-like. Like, we have all this technology that I feel like, I mean, you've been involved with that.
It comes to a point where.
You got older members who don't use that kind of stuff?
Oh, sure.
you know what I'm talking about? Like, they just won't even do that.
Yeah, antiquation may be important
mm-hmm.
at various levels. I agree. I'm
Does
a big
thing slow.
It slows it down. Mm-hmm. This place is not supposed to be fast.
Okay.
It's just not supposed to be. If we act and it becomes law, it affects millions and millions and like that.
Just changing mm-hmm. the back's a bigger pain in the ass.
Correct. And you can't undo mm-hmm. something that you've done.
Well, they try to do that with all the abortion stuff. I mean, don't you think that there's some conversations that for the big government shouldn't even play in because everything's unique as far as there's a state level?
I'm a states' rights guy when it comes to abortion. Just leave it in the states.
I'll leave it at that.
Everybody has their opinion on that. I'm a states guy. Hey, put it in the states. Let states.
My question is, so back to like technology, just not only technology, but just as a leader, do you ever sit back and think if Congress ran this way, things would streamline a lot better? Have you had that thought?
Well, sure, absolutely. Everybody, when we sit in conference with each other and we debate things, Republican Party, Democrats mm-hmm. do it too, Republican Party. But every district is different.
Yeah.
When you say streamline, it's very challenging because my district is similar to Ronnie Jackson's. It's slightly different than Wesley Hunt's. It's similar to Mr. Babin's, but it's not like Mr. Cuellar's.
Mm. Those are different types of Texans right there, man.
They just are. I mean, I just walked you around the whole state. So Tony Gonzalez owns the majority of the border. His border is completely different than District 8.
Mm-hmm.
It is. So, you know, Crenshaw's district.
Does he think everything's going like it's supposed to down there?
No.
Okay, so the guy from down there is actually saying there's a problem.
Correct.
Good to know.
So Crenshaw's district, slightly different than ours. We share a county.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Sessions' district, slightly different than ours. We share a county. And then Mr. Nell sits off the coast of us. And then Mr. Babin sits off the coast of us. But they're all So the word streamline is challenging because we're not the same.
Or problem solving. Take out streamline and put problem solving.
So problem solving, that's a great way of putting it. I could have very easily voted for the continuing resolution to push the money down the road, but didn't have any border in it. And I was one of 60 Republicans. The others voted for it. But our district demands border. So the problem set could not be solved with 218 members. I would not come home to tell the district that I did not vote to have border security. I couldn't do that. That's my job. And because people are like, hey, what's going on with the Republican Party? Why are you guys so blown apart? Mm-hmm. Why can't y'all come together? And
great question.
It is an amazing question. And I answer it. There's a couple ways I'll answer it. It can be generational sometimes. You have freshman class, the two-term, three-term members that are younger, and then you'll have the next generation, and then you can have, you know, like from 10 to 15 years, and then you have the 20 to 30-year folks. That's a generational clash in some circumstances. We're like, hey, look, I don't lead that way. I don't believe that's the right way to do it. And then you have a younger generation coming in saying, well, that's how we operate.
It's tough acting like adults, ain't it?
So
do you call them out on that when they do that stuff?
You debate. I mean, I'm very...
When y'all walk out and get on TV and call each other names...
I don't do that.
I know you don't, there's something down here worse than a fucking bad man. That's the difference of good men.
I'm a Reagan Republican. I don't ever go after my colleagues. If they want to vote a certain way because their district wants them to do that, hey, that is their right to do that. So I don't engage that way.
Is there an ethics code that you have to go by where you can't talk down to a you can't do. There's not one.
You can do that all day long. That's
I get behind closed doors, but like when you come in front of the kids,
hey, freedom of speech, buddy. You can say whatever you want.
God bless America.
So I say there's a generational, clash sometimes in certain pieces of legislation, and then you have the families inside the Republican Party that see things certain ways. We have around 18 to 20 members that represent blue districts. They're Republicans that won a blue district. Okay. They can't vote like I can vote. Mm-hmm. My brothers and sisters from New York and Oregon and Washington, they can't vote the way I can vote.
Yeah.
They just can't do that. Their districts don't want that. On media, social media, and you see us, the top coming off. We're very good about representing our district. In my opinion, Republican member is very good about representing their district. Okay, the Democratic Party, man, they will line up hard and heavy behind one ideology if that's what they'll go behind closed doors and do it. They hash things out. They're very good at that, and they realize that we're very bad at it.
Yeah.
So they do that, and they own that very well. We like to play.
Who leads that?
Mr. Jeffries.
He's the man?
He's the leader.
He's the guy.
But they were doing that before he was the leader.
That's been a thing.
She ran a tight ship, right?
Nancy
Pelosi?
Oh, yeah, very well.
You're telling me that she's the mother up there, right? She cracked that whip. She broke that finger out on you and bust you down, right?
Absolutely, yeah. She was.
You run across her every now and again?
Every now and again.
Tell her I said what's up.
Oh my gosh.
Hey, man, if she could run that place like that.
I've said hello to her a few times. She just says hi and keeps moving.
She's
which is fine.
Said hello to you.
She's a little bit. It's kind of a.
She's a little bitty thing, right?
Oh, tiny. She's a little bitty thing.
That's awesome.
And because I get asked quite a bit in the district. Hey, how do you fix? They'll say fractured. How do you fix the broken Republican Party? And the
was that like mending a friendship?
That's the best way. No, because I get along with everybody. I get along.
No, I'm talking about them. When you say the fracture, it's like some of these they don't get along because
there's some members that absolutely are polar opposite of each other.
There's stuff you have to do in your district and there's stuff they have to do in their district, but it pisses you two off at each other.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't have anything to do with each other. No. Does that
happen? Takes emotion out of it.
You know what
I'm
talking about?
Yeah.
You heard me say take emotion out. Some people get emotionally involved in it, and that's them. That's fine. So I'm a very conservative congressional member. My votes are very conservative. I get along famously with my New York delegation. They can't vote like I vote. You heard me say that. I already said that once. That's fine. And they know that. I sit next to a young lady from Oregon, and we often chat about She'll look at her vote series, I'll look at mine, and they're completely opposite of each other. But she is a Republican, 100% through and through.
Yeah.
And members in the Republican Party would rather take the vote that represents their district to go back and say, I voted the way you wanted me to, instead of saying, hey, look, I went the other direction. You know, and there's votes that, hey, look, and it's hard. You know, there are votes up there that I'm like, man, I'm trying to choke this down. I voted for the National Defense Authorization Act. 60 plus members of the Republican Party did not vote for it.
What was that?
The funding the military.
Oh.
And I voted for it because I'm on House Services. I had 40 amendments in it. The psychedelic language was in there that I fought for all year long, you know, to help decrease the cognitive issues that our service members and veterans are facing. So I voted yes for it, but over 60 members did not. You know,
Why do you think that is?
There's language in there that they didn't like. Mm. There's language in there I didn't like. I had to weigh that bill out. I had to say, okay, hey, look, here's the bad. Here's the number of goods. I know that this language right here will absolutely increase the capabilities of decreasing our suicide rate. I'm going to vote for that. This language here is perfect for the hypersonics. You know, I'm going in after that. And that's you know, we say it's in Congress, you got to make hard choices. I could have voted all that down. I could have voted down everything that I worked for all year long. I could have. I voted yes for it because I thought it was going to be so important mm-hmm. from this year forward. You know, and that's just part of it. It made so many people upset here. Because some of the more conservative members that if you looked up at the board and you saw our names, my name's usually right beside them, and I voted differently. And so everybody's like, oh my God, how could you do that? So I explained that. I come home, I face to face with everybody, and they'll ask me, and I was like, this is why I did it. Mm-hmm. And
they keep up with us around here.
So our district, some districts, congressional members are just elected to go to D.C. and do D.C. If they get home, that's great. You know, District 8, they want to see me.
Yeah.
They want to talk to me. They face to face. They don't.
Man, even the kids know politics around here.
Yeah, it's in the schools.
I mean, I run around in town, man, and get questions that I never even heard before. That's why I'm asking all these educational questions.
What do you think is the hardest? Is that the hardest choice you had to make this year for a vote?
No. I have conversations with my staff quite a bit. If votes that become extremely challenging is because language gets put in votes that shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. Like we could have a VA bill come to the House floor, and then someone will put something that it does not belong at all.
How do they do that? How can they slip stuff like that in there?
It's a choice by the leadership. They say, yeah. Okay, for instance, like the National Defense Authorization Act came through and the FISA reauthorization got put in it.
Really?
It did. Yeah, the leadership put that in there, which should not have happened. Should absolutely not have happened. This is one of the things I have to explain when I come home. Like, you voted for the FISA reauthorization. And we extended the FISA because it was going to expire.
What is
Do we know who did that?
So,
well, can you explain?
Yeah, the leadership did it.
What FISA?
So the
is?
FISA. So FISA allows us to utilize our agencies overseas to find the bad guys.
Fine.
Okay.
Okay. I'll leave it at that. It allows us to utilize assets that we have in place around the globe, not in the United States, around the globe to find terrorist actors so we can act accordingly.
Wouldn't we want that?
We do. Well, okay, well, here's the rub.
Here's what happened.
Here's what happened. The FBI approved a FISA warrant on President Trump.
My gosh. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so
they did that.
Okay.
They freaking did that.
So right now, the Judiciary Committee and the Intel Committee are working how to restructure and relanguage the FISA mm-hmm. authorization, okay? It expired January 1st, right? It was unable to come to the floor by itself, mm-hmm. which means that the committees were unable to put it together well enough where they could bring it to the floor alone mm-hmm. to all the members and say, this is what we're voting on. So what they did is they put the reauthorization the same way that it was in the NDAA and made us all vote on it with the NDAA. They mm-hmm. tucked it in there. It was called a poison pill. They tucked it in there. All right.
It's unconstitutional. So, I mean, it's
so
big.
So here's, but okay, let me explain why FISA is important, which I did. It allows us to act on terrorists abroad.
Abroad.
Which so, we do not, as a military man who knows how this works well, we did not want to lose that capability. Because if it did not reauthorize, we lost it.
Mm-hmm.
It would be gone. We extended it to April. So the authorization was confirmed. We re-upped it till April. So the Judiciary Committee and the Oversight Committee, I'm sorry, Intel Committee, so Judiciary and Intel, Mr. Turner and Mr. Jordan, could bring together the amendments that they want us to vote on the House floor alone in April.
Mm-hmm.
So we had, that was one of the problems with the NDAA.
Is the language already in there from the beginning that it's only allowed to be used abroad?
Yes,
absolutely.
So what they did was absolutely illegal.
I mean, even though, treasonous.
So you can, it's okay to continue to vote for FISA abroad, but you wouldn't the FBI be punishable?
How did that even get abused like that? That judge, whoever that judge was, man.
Can't the FBI... I mean, I do not want to be in trouble with the FBI, but can't the FBI be held accountable for breaking that?
Yes, they can.
Okay.
It seems like a lot of stuff gets, we've been letting stuff slide.
Sure, yeah.
Like little stuff slides, and now it's built up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is that fair?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go back to something, man. You got in there, and you got something. You passed a bill, and you had every member sign that sucker, right?
I did. We had a veterans out there. Cost of living allowance.
I want everybody in the district to hear that we actually got something done.
We did. Yeah. So I got it. So it was in the Veterans
Affairs. I tried to get that shit done. I'm putting this up. My brother did this, man. I'm so proud of him, bro. Yeah. I am. So I want to hear
it. It's got my name on it and everything. It's for the veterans. Yeah, it increases the cost of living allowances. It was a big deal for me. I was happy about it. And we took it to the House floor and actually got to see my name up on the panel and my legislation going across. And I... It was rattling off all the votes, just all yes, 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 yes. And there was two no votes. And
who were they?
I looked up. It's cool. I looked up and it was two Republicans.
Son of a gun. Who were
So I walked over to them and I said, hey, guys, let me chat you up real quick. And there was language in there that they disagreed with. But when I explained the bill to its entirety, they're like, okay, that makes sense. We didn't know that. And they went to yes vote. So I got all the members in the House of Representatives to vote for it. So yeah, it's signed by the president. It's hanging on the wall.
That's awesome.
Yeah, congratulations, pretty cool. Man. How'd that feel? Neat.
It felt great.
Does it feel real good? I mean, what did it feel like to become a congressman? In a correlation with becoming a seal?
Okay, so you guys remember that when the primary election was over, it took like 5 days for us to get notified notified. It came across on a text message. So I was like, okay, so we're the primary candidate. And then...
That felt pretty good?
It was 5 days after, like, because we were having the watch party and everybody was there and it just kept going and going and going. So after 5 days, it was just like, man, okay, all right, and I'm the primary candidate. I think I wanted this big, huge delivery.
Mm-hmm. Underwhelming.
Yeah, like I remember when President Trump won the election in 2016, after they called it, I felt like I won. I was like, yeah. You know, I started cheering. I was screaming, yeah, yeah. I was kind of hoping it would feel that way.
It felt like that for me.
Good.
I'm sorry. I stole that feeling from you, man. Don't worry about it.
And then when the general election came.
I still feel like that.
Yeah. They actually took a couple days for them to call it the general election, too. We called it ourselves and said, you know, we think we have enough votes. And it was, again, it was four or five days later. They're like, hey, congratulations, you won. I would say, even though I've been there a year, and I'm actually, it still feels strange to be called a congressman.
Yeah, settled in. Rookie.
Yeah. I don't even know if I should say it's.
What was that first day like?
Eye-opening. So it was like the third day we went into conference, which I didn't know really what that meant. Remember, we don't have any political background.
Nothing,
zero. So we were having freshman orientation. They were just walking. They were going through all everything that we have to know to be a congressional member.
Like fire hose.
The do's and don'ts, correct.
Yeah, right.
And then maybe the third or fourth day on the schedule is like, hey, you're going to a Republican conference. And the entire conference shows up in a theater. And it was the first time we ever, is when we yelled at each other.
Mm.
we were talking about the House rules and how the House should be governed once we are all sworn in. And I mean, it came unglued.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was sitting in the back, you know, my back against the wall. It's kind of quiet. I don't say, I'm very quiet up there. Excuse me. And I just remember thinking, I was like, oh yeah, all right, here we go. This is it. And oddly enough, all the members after the fact, like, this is the first time we've debated in years and years and years. So I was like, yeah, this is great, man. We're hashing things out. We've got things going on. So that was a really neat experience. Learning to be a congressional member. So when I say learning to be one, you have to understand your role. Like in committee, when I sit in front of witnesses that are testifying in front of, depending on who that is, my job is to get answers for the American public.
Right.
In any given space. And
because that's what they want. They want to hear them suckers say it.
Correct. And I didn't appreciate the gravity of it as the member talking to.
Oh yeah, you got to get it out of
that person, and because you could say, well, I mean, you guys sit here and y'all question these folks, but nothing happens.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we see. We see this on TV. You guys got these people in front of you. You ask them questions that they can't answer. They ask, you know, they give you the runaround. Nothing happens. But with Ms. Stefanik, so this is a case in point. When Ms. Stefanik went after the president of Penn State and Harvard.
She sure did.
Okay, that's our power in committee.
She got if it, necessary. Man, she
freaking... We hold people accountable for actions that they need to be held accountable for.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then it goes on official record so the American public hears it. We have statements, congressional, you know, language mm-hmm. that says, okay, what you're doing is illegal, immoral, unethical, or there's a line there that we need to tweak in language.
Yeah.
We need to make a law that says don't do this because in 1990 this was okay. In 2024 this is not okay. The law needs to be tweaked. That's the power mm-hmm. of those committee assignments.
Probably needs to happen every decade or every 20 years when we change from parent to kids.
Well, I mean,
you know what I mean? Tweak it a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know the best way to kind of figure that one out.
Because sometimes when y'all were screaming at them, man, it's like you could see it in their eyes, like they've been caught in the middle somehow, and they don't know what to do, and they're just trying to save their job. You could see those ladies doing that too, and then some of them were just outright didn't care. But she was tearing them up. She looked fired up.
It can get interesting on those committees.
So what do you think? Not just votes or whatever. What do you think has been the biggest lesson you learned this year as a congressman?
There's a few. I tried never to get hit in my blind spot, and I told my staff that. It seems like don't ever let me get caught off guard. Don't let me walk into a dead end. Don't let me fall on my sword. If you know, I don't want to do that because I don't want to embarrass the district. I represent the district, and I need to make sure that I represent them properly. I was always waiting for the political punch. You know, I was always curious when that was going to happen. Like when I got hit for no reason whatsoever except politics. And that happened twice. And it was unfortunate. And I was like, you know, it's kind of one of those, damn, man. You kind of throw your hands up like, why did this happen?
Mm-hmm.
And it happened because of politics. You know, there was no right, wrong, or indifferent. It was just a political move.
So when everyone in our district's watching TV and the news and stuff like that, is it when what you see on TV, is it as bad or are they just exaggerating and there's a middle ground in there?
All right, let me finish Melanie's question. I'll go to yours. That was for that. And when I think what frustrates me a lot is when we are to a point where we're about to mission success. Okay, mission success being we've worked so hard on a piece of legislation, it's on the floor, we're about to vote for it, and it fails.
Mm.
And the reason it fails, and you know, if someone has the ability to say no just because they want to, it can turn into a lose-lose situation very quickly. And we've been in positions where we've worked very hard on certain legislation, and it went away. And that's frustrating. especially if you're, if you know, I leave home and to go to represent the district, and you know, if you're going to be away and you're grinding out, you're like, all right, we're there. And then when, and if you, you can, you could ask the questions like, I don't understand. Okay, so where was the miss here? Mm-hmm. And I can't even tell you what the answers are, but
so there wasn't a ball dropped by communication or anything like that. It was straight up politics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting enough, so Mr. McCarthy moved certain legislation that got him vacated. Certain legislation. Mm-hmm. Okay, you can write them down. You know exactly which ones they were. And our new speaker, Mr. Johnson, has moved the exact same legislation.
My gosh.
The exact same legislation.
That's something that got personal up there. That's what that means.
And that's you have to know that. That happens in that place. And so you have to be able to, that's where engaging with your colleagues, like where you stand on this.
Mm-hmm.
Am I walking into something that I don't need to be walking in on? Where you sit? They'll tell you. I'm a hard, you know, I'm a no, I'm a yes, I'm a lean no, I'm a lean yes, I'm a no way. Don't ever bring this in front of me again.
Mm-hmm.
That happens. And when they say that, you have to kind of sit back and say, okay, look, I got four hard no's. Because it only takes, we're down to one vote. Mm-hmm. You know, we were 223, so it took 218, but we've lost Mr. Scalise, Mr. Johnson, Mr. Santos, and Mr. McCarthy. So we're the second smallest majority in history, Republican.
Mm.
Right? So we can't go to the floor to vote for legislation if we're missing a vote. Like if I come in and I'm like, I ain't voting for anything anymore, the House stops moving.
Isn't you telling me that if all the Texas delegates got online and y'all worked together, that
we're the largest delegation in the country?
They could control a lot if we all did
that. I say it would stop the House. That's on the Republican side. The Democrats could come over and say, hey, look, we're going to push this through. You're good to go. That's happened.
So what are your goals for the second year?
As they were in the first, I really want the House Resolution 2, the border bill, to come across. I want it to come down from the Senate. And I want that to be signed over by the president so we can enforce it. That's primary goal number one. I live and breathe inside the VA committee, the National Work Queue, which is how veterans members move their packages through to get their disability claims.
Mm.
It's very out of sorts. So I'm trying to do my best to line it up accordingly so the process goes from multiple years to multiple weeks.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's
we just got TRICARE Dental this year.
What's up?
As of January 1.
Just real fast, with I know you met with Mayorkas. Is he taking orders from somebody, or is this something that's following him?
Oh, he's taking direct orders from the president.
All right.
Okay, so talking about the future, how long do you see yourself as a congressman?
3 terms.
That's what we're doing?
I've said that out loud multiple times. I campaigned on it. And my staff and the other members like, quit saying that. Don't tell anybody you're a 3-term guy. I am. I think that that is plenty of time for me to do exactly what I said I was going to do. I think it's plenty of time. I mean, a heavyweight fighter can get in the ring 15 rounds if they make it that long, right? And the fire in the gut going hard. I don't ever want to, and I've done my very best to come home and be the exact same person. I've never changed. I don't want to be up there long enough to go just to get along.
Mm-hmm.
I think a great job to be vice president.
And what?
Vice president?
No.
You don't think so?
And Gunner's going to be in high school. You know, he'll be transitioning into high school. Mm-hmm. And I promised him I'd be here for him. That's just how I see it. I think I'm a term limits guy through and through.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's like, quit, you know, don't quit saying that. I feel that in my bones, right? I just think that's important. And if you're going to lead, you need to lead by example.
Right.
So three terms. I said 4, actually, when I was campaigning. I was like, give me my freshman year.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, 'cause I'm still figuring out how to be a congressional member.
Mm-hmm.
So however the math plays out on that one. If you give me a wash on this one, I have 3 terms, so that's 4 total.
Yeah.
Or, hey, can I do this term and 2 more? You know, I have to get reelected this term, too. Do I pick up a committee chair? I'm a chairman already for a subcommittee, which is great.
So do you fear the future when you're not in the seat, like when it is time to pass the torch?
No, I don't. You know, our forefathers, there's some members in the House of Representatives that have been there for 40 years and like, nobody can do this as good as I can. I just don't believe that.
Yeah.
That's not true.
I just absolutely 100% believe that somebody can come in after me, just like I did Brady, just after Brady did Fields, and so on and so forth through this district, and represent us like we need to be represented. It's a people's choice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they chose.
Been doing this for over 200 years too. I mean,
they chose me. I'm doing my absolute best to widen the road that those that went before me paved.
God, man, whoever says that.
Well, I think
whoever says that they can't, that they're the only ones that can do that job. That's the problem.
That's ego, and it's also I feel like the military kind of teed you up for that position because there's always going to be someone after you.
Yeah, we always pull somebody. New OIC, yeah. New LPO, new chief, new new CO, new XO. And you got fresh, innovative, creative ideas. Who
man, when someone says like, hey man, this place can't run without me. There you are.
Yeah.
I just think anybody can take what I did and then move on it. Brady was Ways and Means chairman. He was in the Ways and Means committee. I have no ambition whatsoever to be in Ways and Means. I'm very happy with the three that we have.
Mm-hmm.
I'm effective there. I speak the language because of my background. So, yeah. You know, it's an honor to ever represent the district. I mean, it's truly an honor to represent where you grew up.
I think that's the coolest thing is you and Marcus actually grew up here. I mean, you're...
That's why we got to do a good job.
Yeah.
Because they'll show up to the gate.
You got
two of us, like, man, so they always got contact with us. Whether he's home or away, man, I'll hear about it.
You went to college in the district. Like, it's full circle.
They know exactly what we're about.
Yeah.
They raised us.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the cool, I mean, is there's some stuff you're like, hey, is this cool?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's plenty of stuff.
You can think of one?
Yeah, I can. So Michael Berry asked me, he's like, what do you want people to say about you when you're gone? He asked me that because I announced my candidacy on his
mm-hmm.
on his show. And I actually think about that question quite a bit. And I think after I leave, if somebody was to say anything about me after everything that I've done, I think the response that I would want, this is where I sit now after my first year, I think the response that I'd want to would be, honored here is like, I wish he was still here.
Mm. That's a good one.
And then I'd leave it at that.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think if I do a good enough job with everything that unpacks itself in Washington, D.C., if they, and you're not going to make everybody happy. I mean, I got people that want to kill me every day. They actually call up and tell me that. But,
well, that'd be the complaints department. You can send them my way.
Yeah.
Marcus wants to be in charge of complaints.
I'm in charge of complaints. Give me a call.
Which I don't know if anybody would ever say anything about, you know, wanting to have a, you know, nobody likes politicians.
Yeah.
You know, I try to consider myself a statesman, but I'm still a member of the House of Representatives, so.
Yeah.
As far away as I, you know, I still dress in blue jeans and boots and wear a ball cap everywhere and. That drives people crazy. But.
Can we talk about your list?
Yeah, sure.
I'm just going to read through a couple of them. And if you have something to add, like, oh, yeah, that was really important or whatever, mm-hmm. just talk on that. So, this is the Senate Bill 777, the COLA Adjustment Act of 2023.
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
If it's on that list, it's important.
Okay.
I didn't freely just sign on to anything that came across the desk. Mm-hmm. Either I co-sponsored, I led.
Okay, so we've got the Veteran Benefits Improvement Act,
mm-hmm.
The Retired Law Enforcement Amendment.
Pushed out for the cops.
That was a big job. One. I actually debated on the floor for that one.
Wait. Was that with the firearms?
Yeah.
Tell us.
I watched that. That might. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
I think a retired federal officer should have the right to have their firearm.
Damn right.
They served with.
A civilian can have one.
As long as they're honorably retired.
Sure, yeah. I mean, it's either that gold watch.
They turned into a debate, which I couldn't believe it turned into a debate, but it did. So, yeah, we got that one pushed there.
Okay. We have the new treatments for PTSD, the improving depression treatment with precision medicine. What mm-hmm. is that?
It lives in the modality of moving research, medical research, and forward in the treatment of cognitive disabilities and whatnot. It's advancing brain science.
Mm-hmm. The Neurology Center of Excellence funding. Mm-hmm. Where's that at?
TBD. There's one in Israel. There's one that we're standing up here. It's in correlation correlates with other facilities.
Okay. Side note, with you having a background in the neurocognitive science, do you think that TBI and dementia and Parkinson's and MS all have some common thread?
Well sure. They come in the brain. You know, it's all cognitive issues. We're very careful in neuroscience because disability. If you're talking disability, if you're talking about dementia, anxiety, depression, all those things that live underneath that umbrella, it can be different than post-traumatic stress. It can be different than post-traumatic stress disorder. It can be different than traumatic brain injury. You just have these different variations of disease that we have in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
But they all come from the brain.
So they can all benefit from these kind of bills.
They can. They absolutely can. But here's the tricky part, because every brain's different.
Mm-hmm.
Your brain's different than Marcus's. Marcus's different than mine, different than Hunter. Nobody has the exact same brain. So the challenge is, because you could be receptive to a treatment for dementia, and if Marcus has dementia too, he could not benefit at all from it. So what is it?
Mm.
You know, how do we put that together? It's hard to cookie cutter brain research because you don't have a pool of 10,000 people have the exact same brain.
Yeah.
What we know is that we have those diseases, and as we engage with these different treatment various treatments, they're saying, hey, this helped dementia very well. This helped Alzheimer's very well. Hey, let's put some groups together, you just start chipping away at it.
Yeah. Okay, so the Epilepsy Center of Excellence,
mm-hmm.
the FY24 NDAA,
mm-hmm.
you have to learn all of this, like what each thing means.
That was a Defense Act.
The Mark Our Place Act.
Yeah.
That was to provide a headstone or marker or medallion on a grave for any eligible Medal of Honor recipient. We have the Review Every Veterans Claim Act.
That was a big one.
What is that?
A lot of VA stuff.
Okay.
Like heavy VA stuff.
We've got Veteran Appeals Decision Clarity Act.
I'm sure you guys went through this. If you miss an appointment, one appointment, they throw your package out.
Oh my gosh.
And start over. So we.
But they can cancel the appointments up in.
They changed that. We changed that.
That's crazy. The Improving Travel for Families Act. That was the global entry you were talking about. The Modernization VA Disability Benefit Questionnaire Act. The Tribal Gaming Regulatory Compliance Act. We actually have a
Alabama Coushatta.
Native American tribe in our district. The Veteran Benefits Improvement Act. The Veteran Compensation Cost of Living Adjustment Act of 2023. That's the one with your name
on
it.
On the wall.
Stop Human Trafficking of Unaccompanied Migrant Children Act. That establishes proper vetting standards by HHS, Office of Refugee Resettlement, and Department of Homeland Security before releasing to an unaccompanied child sponsor, child to a sponsor. So Marcus and I saw this when we went down to the border and we were allowed to go into the processing center. And there were men with children that were clearly not their children.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very disturbing. And the kids looked scared.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that you got that done. Foreign Adversary Advisory Board legislation. Do you ever read these and just want to fall asleep?
Well, no, you can't do that.
We
sit down with it. Because the language can be very extensive. You have thousands of pages. So we sit down with the team and we go through it line by line.
You've got, okay, these are filed amendments. You've got the, with Rep. Correa, the NDAA amendment. Mm-hmm. The DOD Psychedelic Research Appropriations and Authorization Amendment, the Kinetic Operations of Support of Host National Forces, the DOD Authority.
You should say, hey, we're going to list everything at the bottom of the webpage.
Well, I want you to, if you have something that you want to say about it, say it. the DOD authority to counter those attempting to enter the United States under arms, FY24 NDAA amendment. Mm-hmm. Plan to kill or capture members of the Jalisco cartel.
Boom.
Let's talk about that.
It just says it all right there. That's some of these amendments that I pushed across that got shot down where they were like, hey, that's really over the top. That's team guy aggressive.
Yeah. Well, there's a million. So if anybody, including our constituents, I say our family proud, just go to Morgan Luttrell. What is it? Is it just morganluttrell.com? Mm-hmm.
You can go to our district site.
Honorable Congressman.
Yeah. There's a million things that he has either helped get pushed through, that you can see where he's voted if you go to house.gov. And if you have a question, they can just email the campaign office, right?
Sure. And the official office. Magnolia.
I'm sorry. Yeah. And then is there anything else you want your constituents to know or American?
So this 118th Congress is in the second year. We're running again for the 119th. Full steam ahead. We're in another election cycle. So the world's pretty turbulent right now. I find myself in a good spot in the committees that we sit on to address the threats from China to Taiwan, Ukraine, Russia, and Israel and Hamas. That's unfolding. And I really want, I promised myself that I would get that national work queue for the veterans fixed this year in my first term. So it's exciting.
Do you foresee a terrorist attack from within with all the people coming over?
Gosh, I always want to say no, but our history says I always think otherwise. You can never, if you just how Hamas came into Israel undetected and unexpected, no footprint in the cyberspace, no communication efforts, something they weren't tracking, and it was just hit. We have over 8 million people that have come in here.
8 million. People don't have any, they can't rationalize that number. Just in here, we don't, let's...
I pray nothing happens. I mean, we're already dropping bombs from American planes overseas. Mm-hmm. I mean, so technically, we're at war. Well, Congress didn't approve it, but technically, they didn't approve Afghanistan and Iraq either. But once you put a warhead on a forehead from American aircraft, we're engaged. I don't want Gunner and Axe and Lincoln. I don't want them to have
the same people that we had to fight.
And here we are engaging in the Middle East again.
Here we are, man.
All right. Well, thank you for coming on and talking about your freshman year.
Good job, brother.
Hope it came out okay.
Yeah.
Of course. When is that next election cycle?
November.
November 8th, bro. Or no, it's November 6th, 7th, 8th, whatever that Tuesday is.
Well, looking forward to that. And thank you so much for coming down. And thank you all listeners for tuning in. We'll see you guys next week.